is 12.
Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, I have the honor and benefit of sitting down with my friend, Mr. Greg Benz. If you are in the world of image manipulation, compositing, editing, retouching, any of that stuff, you probably have heard his name, or at least you may have heard of his software, Lumensia. It's one of the titles he's put out. Greg has agreed to come on the show today to do a two-parter. So first part is going to be Greg and I shooting the breeze about the who, what, when's, and why, the origin story of Greg Benz and Lumensia. And the second part is he's agreed to, from the horse's mouth, take us through Lumensia and talk about it. And then part three, like I said, will be you guys asking questions for a little bit before we close it off. So with that, Greg Benz, welcome to This Week in Photo, man. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me on. Fun to be in the inaugural Zoom call here.
Yeah, it's weird. So we'll see how this works. You know, I have questions about quality and all that stuff. So this is my Elon Musk SN10 kind of test rocket. So we're gonna see how it goes.
You can just blame it on me, man. My space looks like chaos. You got this like gorgeous backdrop. You know,
you don't see what's outside of this window right here. So you don't.
Everything is in the pile of the corner.
It totally is. Like, get that off the screen. All right, man. Well, let's just start with just a quick, like I said, the origin story, Greg Benz, where you started and where you're at. You know, I know you're a photographer. You're a very accomplished photographer. You've traveled around. You do a lot of landscape stuff. You've got all kinds of stuff going on. I was just kind of doing my research again on you to get refreshed about just your lineage and where you came from and what kind of work you do. And I was just blown away by the work that you're putting out, let alone the software side of it. So take us through that. Take us through Greg Benz, the photographer, and then transition us into why Lumensia.
Yeah. So maybe the most important thing to know about me is I'm just a super curious person. Like, everyone has different stories for why they get into photography. For me, I'm like an explorer at heart. I love figuring out how the world works. I love seeing it all. And that's really how I started my journey. It was basically this snowball that just keeps picking up more momentum over the years. But, you know, back in 2000, I was living in London for half a year. I was an engineer at Ford at the time and camera happy, start taking pictures of everything. And at that time I had, you know, this awesome 2-megapixel little digital pocket camera. And one of my friends convinced me to get a real camera, which is film at the time. And it kind of took, right? And pretty soon I'm shooting like every possible genre to start paying for the gear. I'm doing weddings and family portraits and everything else, because once you're shooting, you know, the tab starts coming due for all that gear. Mm-hmm. And like about 6 years ago, I made the transition to full time. So my home base these days is really landscape and cityscape, but I've done a little bit of it all. And with that, I'm, you know, an instructor, I'm a photographer, and I'm a software developer. And that kind of came about as a combination of me loving to teach other people, but also the software side came about from just wanting solutions to my problems. I was explaining to you last time we were chatting how, you know, I can think in a left brain way and I can think in a right brain way. What I can't do is like use both sides of my brain at the same time. So I need to kind of sit down as a tinkerer, as an engineer, create, you know, software to do the more technical things I want to do. And then I can sit down as an artist and really just kind of feel the moment and go with things. So that put me on this path of developing software as a solution to my needs. I love Photoshop. But I needed to bend it to my will in a way that made sense to me. So that's kind of the origin of how this all came together. So it's just become like this all-consuming thing. I feel like I eat, sleep, and breathe photography these days.
Yeah, you're kind of on the hook now, because you got a lot of fans that love the software and are singing its praises, as you saw during our member mixer last week. And it's well deserved, right? I've spent the last several days marinating in videos. I think I was watching videos from you like 5 years ago going through it. And it's interesting that the principles of luminosity masking remain the same, right? The tools are better, but the basic thing that you're doing, using highlights and shadows so that you can have a mask to give finer grain control over the final image, it's still the same from previous version of Photoshop all the way to now, just a little bit or a lot easier. So on that, Greg, so you're this is what gets me about you. So you're software developer, engineer, you know, full on zeros and ones on the one hand. And on the other hand, it's the Picasso expressive artist, you know, doing all this stuff. And you said it's kind of hard to kind of bend the two. I'm curious to know about that. Like, what does that look like? Is it literally a toggle in your brain when you sit down at the computer? You're like, okay, I'm in zeros and ones mode and I'm going to write code, or I'm in pixel punishing mode. I'm going to make some art. What does it look like when you actually sit down to do stuff?
Right. Yeah. My screen is either looks like a mountain stream or the Matrix. You know, for me, it's more, I get really hyper-focused on a task, right? So if I'm working on an image and I have to, you know, because luminosity mask, at the end of the day, right, all it is a tool for precision. It's an ability to tell Photoshop, hey, I want to go and work on the cloud. I want to work on the mountain. I want to work on this person's face. Like, for me, it's an additional layer of a language to speak to Photoshop. And so, you know, that makes intuitive sense to me, but the execution of that, you know, when I was first getting into it, it was like, you got to pull up the channels palette in Photoshop and you got to like do these like weird control click this and do this thing and then combine it five different ways. And so it's complicated and it's repetitive. And that just became a real barrier to me. It's not that I couldn't think through it, but it's like, by the time I think about that, I lost my train of thought, or it wasn't repetitive, you know, for me, like, if I have to do like 10 steps to execute something, I am probably not going to do the same 10 steps a few times over. But if I have a tool that helps me do it in a consistent way, now I start to see, oh, when I do it this way, I get a better result than when I do it this way, right? So some of that learning was lost. So it's not that it's totally separate, but for me, there's an emphasis in one direction or the other. Like when I'm doing the software, I'm just like super into the weeds of like, hey, that thing's broken. Let me figure out how to fix it so it doesn't happen again. And what's going on, and isolating a test case. And it's just total nerd out. And when I'm trying to be, you know, on the photography side of just really processing my images, it for me is very much about storytelling. And, you know, so to me, photography is like visual poetry, right? It's not a language that I think most people are very comfortable with. It's not something we learn in school or other people really teach, but when you take an image there, I think there's a school of thought that you're like just documenting, right? I take a picture. It's like almost like forensic evidence. And if you edit it, it's like a sin, or maybe you can edit it this much, or everyone has like a different boundary, but there's this idea that it somehow is capturing reality. And I don't believe that at all, right? You're capturing like one moment in time in one direction with one, you know, field of view, you know, where you've taken a three-dimensional world, compressed it flat, lost detail, lost the sound, lost the smell. Like it's totally stripped of the human experience of a place. And so for me, I'm trying to share an experience. I'm trying to share not necessarily like the technical, like what was the place, you know, from a scientific perspective. I'm trying to share like, you know, what was it to me? How did I feel about it? Yeah. And so I very much am thinking about that with, you know, as I process my images, like, you know, what's the thing I want to talk about? You know, you wouldn't come back from a trip and tell people like every single little detail about your journey, right? You'd focus on a few things and you'd have a lot of passion about it. And that's where you'd focus your story. And that's how I think about my photography as well, is, you know, I'm trying to share an experience like, hey, I just got back from a trip up to the North Shore of Minnesota. And I found this incredible waterfall I'd never seen before. And, you know, I was there in the middle of the night and I could, you know, hear wolves in the distance and all this kind of stuff. And I'm trying to somehow capture that journey and that experience and share it with my friends or my family or other photographers or whoever the audience might be. Yeah. So I think at the end of the day, the intention and the intensity is very different between these things as well. So I don't know if that fully answers your question, but it's this fluid thing. And, it's definitely shifting gears, but I think, you know, we all do that in our lives, right? We all have different moments where we're a different person at work than we are on the weekends or whatever it is. And this is just one other way where I'm shifting gears to suit a particular purpose. And to me, the technical and the artistry all at once was just, it was like too much. I couldn't do it well.
Yeah. I wonder about that. Cause you know, we talk about how advanced we are now with you know, Photoshop and all the associated tools, and you know, there's just a million tools out there, you know, not even AI and all that stuff notwithstanding, there's a bunch of different paths now to get to an amazing result, you know, at the end of the day. And I wonder, back in the day, you know, film and chemistry and all that stuff, it was relatively simple, right? It was light through a negative onto an emulsion and chemistry, and is the chemistry good? And, you know, those were the variables that we're playing with. Now there's so much power. I remember, do you remember back in the day with Kai's power tools? You remember Kai Krause?
Yeah.
Right. He put out this thing that he called CHOPS, channel operations, that he put out, basically it was early internet, right? He put out this list of recipes for doing stuff like making metal and things look like plastic and things like that. And it was literally, okay, do this, make a drop shadow, blur the drop shadow, you know, run stylize on the drop shadow, emboss it, now load it in as a channel and do, you know, is all these things just to get like a chrome look. And then I look at that barrier to entry to doing things at that level. It was thick. It was like, okay, if I really want to do this, I need to internalize what's going on with this channel recipe that this guy set down. With the stuff that you're doing, you've taken that and put it in code for the most part. And now people can take all the complexity of understanding and remembering certain recipes just to get a result, and then concentrate on the final image and telling that story like you were talking about. Is that the goal? Is technology, right? Make complex processes simple or simpler so that we can get on with the business of what the final goal is.
I think whenever it comes to media, there's always this problem that the technology and the business model, as it may be in certain cases, like dictates the storytelling. I mean, you look, for example, today at what shows you see on Netflix, right? And the kind of like binge watching and stuff we do, like that, you would never make those series back in the 1990s the way you do now, right? If you did a radio drama in the 30s, it'd be different. And if you look at photography, it's the same thing. I mean, you know, you pull up these old, you know, near daguerreotype looking images of great Aunt Eleanor or something, right? And she looks like half ghost and she's totally stiff. And you look at this and think, man, people were like really boring back in like 1895, right? Yeah. But what you're not thinking about is like, you know, they literally had like a wooden structure that they would like snap to their neck to hold them still because the exposures were so long, they'd be blurry. Yeah. And so that the technology of that day force them to tell these really like static, boring stories that really strip the emotion out of these people. And I'm not saying that they behave the way we do today, but I don't think that when I look at an old photograph, I'm getting a great representation of the person there because there's no casual snapshot. You're not taking the picture with you to capture the real moments. It's like I dressed up once every like 20 years and went down and someone shoved that stick in the back of my head and here we go.
Right. You know? Totally. And so, okay, now I got to stand still for 60 seconds and don't move. Right.
Right. Like hopefully some fly doesn't like land on your face or something. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I feel that that's what we have today. Like we've got these digital cameras that like have all these megapixels and they've got great dynamic range and the color's better. And they're so much better than they were, but there's so much that's missing. Right. At the end of the day, it's not capturing light the way we see it. It's not capturing the whole experience. Like we'll never get the whole thing. And so we always have to deal within that medium. So like I said, there's nothing wrong if someone wants to treat it as like a scientific experiment and, you know, thou shalt not use Photoshop, but you know, that's not me. And that's not my stuff. That's, you know, if you come to me, it's like we're going to tell a story and I'm not trying to create a false reality. I'm just trying to, what to my opinion is a better representation of the truth, right? Because I don't believe that. Yes.
Right?
My experience, right? Because this photograph does not represent what I saw. There's so much missing from it. And by the time I'm done, I'm not going to tell you that it's like forensically more accurate. Maybe it is. Sometimes it is better, right? You need to do the color corrections, things like that. It depends how you use the tool. It could be a total fantasy, but it could be a better version of the truth. It's what you want it to be. And so, you know, that's very much what I'm trying to do is help tell better stories by taking that technology that I have and pushing it one step further, right? And I think that's part of the fun of, you know, the exploration and the curiosity is there will always be something better, and you're always going to keep trying to push that boundary. Just as, you know, photography has gotten so much better in the last 10, 20, 50, 100 years, I think that's going to continue to be true in whatever form it is, whether it's more 3D or better capture. Maybe we start adding sounds, or like, who knows what cool things we'll be doing down the road. But, I'm not trying to gather like likes and stuff on Instagram. You know, if you look at my account, like, this guy does not focus too much on this really. I'm just trying to tell a good story. And, you know, when I go to some remote place by myself with a good friend or whatever, I don't know, that experience to me is worth more if I can kind of hang on to it and share it with other people, then it's just there. And there are those moments too, when you don't share it, right? You certainly have those private moments. You've got a picture that you never share, a picture you didn't take, that kind of thing. But there are those moments where you feel like, man, how great would it be? You know, I get that a lot when I'm out on solo journeys. Like, I'll go on these, you know, road trips in Minnesota, and a lot of times I'm by myself, and, you know, I've come face to face with wolves, and I hear the loons and wave crashing, and, you know, you have this like solitary experience. And I don't know, there's something in me that like compels me to share it. I'm not, I think, a generally extroverted person, but I do like to share that experience, because to me, it's so powerful. And I love hearing other people's experience, right? I love this kind of shared journey of photography, that we have this back and forth dialogue. I love looking at other people's work. I never get much time to do it. I'm so busy with a lot of things, but I always love seeing, like, you know, what's this journey someone took through, like, Kyrgyzstan? What's that place like? I love that feeling of exploration and seeing, you know, even if it's a place I've been, right, someone else's perspective on it. Like, what did it mean to you? What do you think about that place?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that. Cause it is in very, I like to say that the camera is very much a time machine, right? And the way that you framed it, it's a time machine, and it is a memory capturing device, right? It's not only capturing time, but it's also bringing you back. And through the process of post-processing, your job is to reveal that story from that two-dimensional scene that you captured. Let's switch gears a little bit, Greg, and talk about, that post-processing side of it and Lumenzia, and start with what is, and I'll throw some devil's advocate in here too. So what is luminosity masking for those that don't know what it is? And why would I want to use that when I have such powerful masking tools inside of Photoshop natively already? Why not just use what's already there? Why do I need something on top of it?
Sure. So it's this term that started in a certain place. And I think as the art has developed, it's not even to my opinion, like, the best term. It's not just about luminosity, and it's definitely not really just about masking either. Mm-hmm. It ultimately is a way of giving you more control over your selections and masks in Photoshop. And the original idea is based on the luminosity of the image, right? I can select shadows, I can select highlights, midtones, Ansel Adams Zone 7, like, there's all these different ways you're looking at it. But these days, there are so many different approaches and tools, but you could be selecting based on color. In my tool, Lumenzia, you can select based on how does a pixel compare to the pixel next to it. There's all these different ways you might select it, but the general idea is that when you talk about luminosity masking, you're using the image data itself to generate a mask or a selection, right? So the luminosity being the stand-in for this idea that you're using the image. And then the mask is kind of the ultimate destination in terms of, you know, in Photoshop, you've got two critical tools for precision. You have selections and you have masks. And selections are basically like using a stencil where, you know, if I'm drawing on paper, you know, with a pencil, and I do it within a stencil, like, it guides the tool so that I'm more accurate. Like, I could never draw a perfect circle, but with a compass, no problem, right? And it's same kind of idea that you get this precision with a selection. And a mask is a little bit like taking a bunch of photographs and cutting out the parts you want and making this collage when you stack them all together. So I can cut out the best sky from one image, and I can cut out the best river from another image, and suddenly I can snap them together to get the best overall scene. And so that's where the masking comes in. And when you're working with luminosity masking, a lot of times what you're actually doing is making the mask through the selection. So it gets a little bit technical once you start diving into that, but ultimately it's all about having this precision in what you reveal in the image, or you know, where you adjust something in the image. So if we just took like the simple example of like working in Lightroom, you've got all these local tools, right? I can do it like a gradient or something to work on just the sky, but it's not that accurate, right? You can do better in Photoshop, and you go into Photoshop and you could grab, say, like the magic wand, but the magic wand is an all or nothing deal, right? The sky is 100% selected. The foreground is 0% selected. There's this hard edge and it's not going to look very nice going between them.
Right.
When you use a luminosity selection or mask, what you're going to generate is a proportional response. So you're no longer just saying, I'm going to only use this pixel or only show the one beneath it. Now I can kind of blend the two. So it's basically giving you like opacity on a pixel level. So I can take that sky and make it fully selected in the sky, but then in the transition area, it's going to gradually get to the foreground, so that when I blend two representations of the image together, you don't have any edge. You have this seamless pairing of a couple of different things. So a lot of what I'm doing with luminosity mask is make two or three or five different versions of an image and then just pull together the best pieces of it. Or I might be just selectively making some adjustments. So if let's say I'm doing dodging and burning, the image already has highlight and shadow, and that tells a story about the shape and the depth in an image, right? That's probably the biggest challenge of photography, is you've got a flat media to show a three-dimensional world. Yeah. And highlight shadow is how we determine on a, you know, flat piece of paper or flat monitor where the depth is. So I can go in with a luminosity selection and I can target the highlights and make them brighter, and I can target the shadows and make them darker. And that sounds like you're just adding contrast, but it's much more finesse than that. I can, you know, highlight, I can change this highlight a certain amount and this highlight a different amount and leave this one alone. So you have this perfect artistic control that you could never do something like that with a curve.
Yeah.
Where you have that finesse. But that's kind of the idea of luminosity mask and selection. It's not that they do something to your image, they give you the accuracy to create a better version of it. It's just giving you precision.
Yeah. And with that, you and I talked about this a little bit before, that as I was going through my understanding luminosity masking and kind of diving into it, looking at YouTube videos, right, and your videos and others, the vast majority of those videos that I was looking at were landscape focused. Is luminosity masking the domain of the landscape photographer, or can us portrait photographers in fashion and macro, you know, can we use it as well? Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, you definitely can use it for anything. I think there's every genre of photography can benefit from selections and masks. And if you're using selections and masks, there's a good chance that a luminosity based selection or mask will be useful in your workflow. I don't personally show it because I shoot landscape, and you know, the portrait images I have, I don't necessarily have rights to put on YouTube and all that kind of stuff. So, but I certainly do use it. I mean, in my own personal work with family and friends, I'll use luminosity mask to retouch it, but I just don't have the ability to really share that on my channel. A lot of times I haven't had someone sign the rights and whatever. And it's just not what I really personally do with my artistry.
Yeah.
But you absolutely can. I think it does get a lot of use in landscape, because landscape photographers deal with this extreme light, and there's this sense that, oh, let's go use luminosity mask to deal with the high dynamic range, just like HDR is really exciting for that crowd. So there's a great fit there, but that's really just the first use of luminosity masks. You can use it for so many other things that have nothing to do with expanding dynamic range. I could go into a portrait and, for example, like I've got a weightlifter and he's got sculpted muscles and I want to make the bulging muscle look bigger. Well, I can dodge and burn on that more precisely with a luminosity selection. Or I've got a model at sunset, I want to work on that sunset color, I can isolate it from the subject. Or maybe I'm shooting a family portrait and the kid just like ran between some trees and there's like a shadow on the kid's face. Mm-hmm. And that was like the best image, except that the light is not right. Well, you can still recover that. It takes some work to do something like that. That's a pretty advanced use of it, but that's the, you know, at the end, the kind of thing you can do to really push forward is some really advanced things like that. So if there's something in your image that you can identify based on having a unique brightness or a unique color or something about the pixels that are unique that way, and you want to just adjust that, that's the time when you should be thinking, hey, a luminosity mask would be great for that. So, you know, highlights, shadows, isolating a subject. There's so many places you might use it. You know, tools like Refine Edge in Photoshop. I mean, that is basically like a form of luminosity masking. It's just targeted by Adobe for edge control and that sort of thing. But similar principle, you could go in and refine your cutout using luminosity selections. And in fact, if you look at older textbooks and some of the stuff you're talking about, if you go back to like the era of Kina, like in the origins of this, people were using channels to be like, hey, go grab the red channel and do this thing. Well, that is luminosity masking. That's exactly what that is. You know, these days you don't necessarily have to open up the channels and dig in to do that, but that's literally what they're doing. You know, so that's where this all drives from Photoshop. I mean, it's at the end of the day, these are things you can do manually in Photoshop. It's just a question of the complexity, the knowledge, and the determination to do it. So if you wanted to do these things natively with Photoshop, you can. I think when we start talking luminosity masking techniques, what we're talking about is an aid to make these things like be much, much easier, faster, and just generally more feasible to focus on whatever you're trying to do there.
Yeah. I want to get into that when you do the demo for sure. One last question. I don't know if you can answer this. I know we're you and I are very much in the Lightroom Photoshop world, though I use Capture One. I have that on my machine. Amazing piece of software. And I know a lot of members in the Twit Pro community use Capture One and live by it and swear by it. But looking at Capture One versus luminosity masking and from the perspective of being able to target certain tonal ranges or certain colors in an image, you can do the same thing within Capture One with its color selection kind of artistry that it has in there. Is that different than luminosity masking, or is Capture One, did they just sort of create some robots that go in there and make it easier for you to create a luminosity mask on the back end?
So the thing is, yes, it is a form of luminosity masking. The question is like, what are the capabilities? It's a little bit like saying you have wheels, right? Like my bike has wheels, my car has wheels, race car has wheels, but these are not the same thing. So, you know, I don't know the Capture One setup too well. I actually have it. I just don't use it that much. But if we're looking at like say range masks in Lightroom or Blend If in Photoshop, these are all these like basically mathematical things where you say, you know, like target the highlights. And you can do a lot with that. It's great for color grading. It's great for maybe targeted vignettes. But it's also very limiting. Like when I talk about blending images together to get the best of all this, that's not the kind of tool you would use. What ends up happening is you don't really want to stick strictly to, you know, this thing's an 80% highlight. Usually what you're trying to do is say, I want the entire sky with a good transition. Mm-hmm. And if you use like a range mask or some sort of like Blend If type tool, well, the clouds, the sky has all this variability to it, and you're just blend multiple parts of these layers together. So you've got like cloud movement, you've got like high and low contrast blending into this muddy mess. You don't want that. So if you have a luminosity mask, that's great. That's always helpful. And I think luminosity masks should be in every piece of software you use. But if your tool doesn't allow you to create a selection to manually brush in that result to build up as much or as little of that layer as you want, then you're lacking the control you need. Like I usually tell people using Lumentia, if you're not using the selection button, like 90% of the time, then you are not getting the most out of the tool. Like, and that's why I don't like the name luminosity masks, is to me, the magic is luminosity selections. That's where the really cool stuff happens. That's where you get the advanced dodging and burning. That's any exposure blend that was ever interesting, perspective blending, all these like crazy advanced things you can do. But even the more basic stuff, it's almost always better to use a selection and then make an artistic choice than try and apply a math formula to it. The same reason that HDR fails. I mean, HDR is just math on an image and people are never happy with it, even though people spent like decades trying to make these tools be perfect. And if you look at a tool like a Blend If, it's nowhere near as advanced as HDR. It's just a very simple math equation with a ramp between two values. So what ends up happening is there's no artistic control over that process to say, you know, what do I really want to reveal in this image? You just remove that human element from it. Maybe someday we'll have an AI that makes the masks for you and it looks beautiful. I don't know. It's possible. Like, I kind of suspect it's unlikely that we'll really get to that place. But I think that's the key thing to be thinking about is, like, anytime someone offers you a luminosity mask, great. That is a tool for making that piece of software better. It's not a tool for doing anything on its own. It's only a tool for making whatever it lives in better. Like, if you have luminosity masks in Photoshop, it makes Photoshop better. But the luminosity masks on their own, they don't do anything but make Photoshop more precise, right? And luminosity masks in Lightroom make Lightroom better. And luminosity masks in Capture One make Capture One better. Yeah. I do like the Photoshop environment because it's the one place where everything can come together. You can have full raw, full ability to make these like infinitely complicated master selections and all this kind of stuff. So that's why I live in that domain. And that's why I think, you know, most landscape photographers really live in that domain. It's because you do have that kind of control. It's daunting though, right? I mean, you do have to kind of understand some of these concepts, and there is a learning curve. I always tell people, like, don't expect to just master this in one day, but it's really worth that investment in that journey.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. And I've seen some amazing work that comes out from folks that have mastered or even that are just starting to use luminosity masking. It's kind of like a revealing process of, oh crap, I should have been doing this all along, right? So very, very interesting. So in our time here, I'd be honored if you would do a quick demo, just kind of a walkthrough 101 of Luminzia and show us how you would tackle an image, you know, from maybe not start to finish, but how you would start working on an image, and then we'll open it up for a Q&A.
Yeah, great. Well, fire any questions. I'm going to quick get the screen share going here.
And folks that are listening to this on the podcast, this is where the podcast episode ends. So thank you for listening and watching this episode of This Week in Photo. Check out Greg. Greg, what's your URL for all of this stuff?
GregBenzPhotography.com is the place to go. My last name, it's GregBenz, like the car.
Awesome. GregBenzPhotography.com. So check him out. And we'll have a link in the show notes and in the community to all of Greg's stuff. And just so you know, for the folks in the community, we're going to be bringing in a lot of Greg's videos into the courses area within the community as well. So you guys will be able to access a library of knowledge that he's put together on luminosity masking and Luminzia going forward. So with that, thank you folks for listening. And we will continue with the demo. So take it away, Greg.
This is Twitter.